The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Women's Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericawomen.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff and management. Welcome to Shannon Skinner Live. On our show, you'll meet some extraordinary guests. Shannon is host of the popular television program and online platform, ExtraordinaryWomenTV.com. Now she brings those resources to a radio platform for an even more in-depth look at the stories and solutions you can use to live your magnificent life and make our world a better place. Now, here's Shannon Skinner.
Hello, welcome to Shannon Skinner Live here on Voice America's Women's Channel. I'm your host, Shannon Skinner. This is the premiere episode of the show, and I'm excited to bring to you fascinating topics and guests in the coming weeks. In this series, my topics cover all touch points of a woman's life. I'll talk to experts, change makers, activists, and everyday people doing interesting things with their lives from around the world, all to inspire you to live your best, most magnificent life. Because when we live our best lives, we are changing the world. And not just for our own sake, we are making this world a better place for generations to come. This is our legacy. Every week I will open the show with a short essay on a topic that is informative, thought-provoking, or simply make you laugh, or even cringe. And I will introduce you to my special guests who will infuse you with ideas, passion, and drive. And as I have done on my television show and online series, Extraordinary Women TV, each episode will have a regular good-to-know tips segment, providing you with the stuff you need to get your inspiration into action. And so I invite you to join me on my journey as I, too, want to make a world, this world, a better place for generations to come. Today's topic touches on the world of celebrity activism, what it means, and how it impacts the social good. Celebrities have a big impact on us, on the way we view ourselves, and how we live our daily lives. Stars from the big screen to the little screen, across all media, have an influence on us. We admire them, we loathe them, and in our quiet moments, we might even wish we were one of them, a shiny Hollywood star. Admit it. There was a time in Hollywood when societies worshipped and idolized mythological gods and goddesses. Today, we worship and idolize the celebrity, especially the Hollywood star. We put celebrities on a pedestal, we look up to them, and yet we love to tear them down. Many celebrities are using their celebrity for the social good. Stars like Angelina Jolie, Russell Brand, Emma Watson, and Academy Award-nominated actress Muriel Hemingway, who I had the honor of interviewing for my television show, Extraordinary Women TV. When we put celebrities on a pedestal, though, how does that impact our power, spirit, and health? Are we driven to fight for causes and make social change? How does celebrity worship make us feel, deep down, about ourselves? Well, joining me today are two experts who have built successful careers around celebrity. In the first half hour, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Samita Nandy, who's the Director of Media and Celebrity Studies and Cultural Critic on Fame. And in the second half of the show, I'll be speaking with a royal historian, Carolyn Harris. Well, my first guest, Dr. Samita Nandy, is the Director of Center for Media and Celebrity Studies and Cultural Critic on Fame. She's been featured in many media outlets, including CBC TV and the Globe and Mail. Her work has been published in books, The Performance of Celebrity and the Emotions Industry. Her forthcoming book, Fame in Hollywood North, A Theoretical Guide to Celebrity Cultures in Canada, will be published in 2015. Samita earned her PhD in celebrity media and celebrity culture from Curtin University, Australia. She's based in Toronto. Well, welcome to the show, Samita. It's so great having you here.
Thank you for having me, Shannon. It's so wonderful to speak to you.
Yes, and this my premiere show. So now we know each other. We know each other from your work here in Toronto with the center. Tell us a little bit about your background. And what inspired you to really want to study fame and celebrity?
I did my PhD on celebrity culture. I never thought that there was a doctorate on fame. It was just like being an accidental actress. It just happened out of a conversation with my supervisors. And I had a background in broadcast journalism and filmmaking, so the topic wasn't too foreign to me. My supervisors really wanted me to focus on a topic that is relevant to my country. I was doing my PhD in Australia. And one of the compelling questions that I felt needed to be addressed is, why does Canada have no star system? Why there's this myth that Canada doesn't have stars? So I thought, you know, this would be very interesting to examine, and that's how I started the PhD, and I sort of drew on my experiences on my media background and, particularly my journalism background that I had before. So it was a very interesting journey, and it's something that I continue to examine in my postdoctoral career.
Now, fame, well, let's just talk about sort of what is the Center of Media Celebrity Studies and what is its significance?
That's a good question. The Center for Media and Celebrity Studies is an international research network, and it sort of evolved out of my doctoral research. While I was doing my doctoral research, I felt there was this urgent need to bridge gaps between academics and media practitioners. Many academics felt the need to have more informed opinions in media and to contribute to research, especially, you know, when it came to opinions on popular culture. So after my PhD on fame, I developed a research center, and it's called the Center for Media and Celebrity Studies, and it consists of a very strong board of faculty members, postdoctorates, and grad students. And basically what it does, it helps coordinating academic research and commentaries on fame. So we sort of coordinate academic and media relations.
Is that something that's needed? Did you see a need, a gap that needed to be filled?
It is really urgent, because what we find, there's a disconnect between academia and media. A lot of times, especially with tabloid press, there's misrepresentation or there's lack of research coming from academics. A lot of times what happens is that academics don't have a lot of time to contribute. And also they may not have the necessary, you know, exposure or skill set to media. So it was a gap that really needed to be bridged. And we see a lot of promise. We see a lot of interest. So we're very excited about it.
Well, congratulations on the launch of the center, and I think that it is something that is definitely worthwhile and needed. Now, let's just turn our attention then to celebrity, and really, what is celebrity?
A celebrity could be understood from many different perspectives. According to cultural studies, a celebrity is not necessarily a person, and this view shocks many people. A celebrity is a media construction, it's a representation. According to scholar Chris Rojek, a celebrity is a media construction, and without that media representation, a celebrity cannot exist. But other scholars, like Sean Redmond, would say that there is a person behind that representation. A celebrity is a sensing body. It's a person that touches, that reaches out, and that can be touched by fans as well. So, I think these perspectives really help fans to understand that, you know, celebrity is really, you know, a construction. It has a persona, but at the same time, it is also a human being. And I think that's very important to understand so that we don't always commodify them and understand them in very simplistic ways. Like any other human being, it's quite complex. And it does have a persona that is filtered.
So behind the celebrity is a human. So the celebrity in itself is not a human. It's something that has been constructed then through media.
Exactly. I think it's very important for us to understand that what we see in the media is a representation, and there's a person behind that representation. So the understanding of a celebrity is quite layered. It's not that simplistic.
Now, what are the origins of celebrity? Because it started somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, in the early days, we had in mythological times, there were gods and goddesses we worshipped. Our relationship with mythology has changed. But what gave rise to the celebrity?
I would trace back celebrity culture to the Greek and Roman era, you know, when we had heroes and leaders, and of course mythological figures sort of emerged at that time. The word celebrity has its origin in the Latin word celebratum, and that really expresses a celebration. It's not necessarily celebration, but the word celebration has its root in that same Latin word, a celebratum. And basically, what we had in the past was a celebration of heroic figures, and that celebration may not necessarily exist in today's media culture. So we do have a long history of constructing, representing, and, you know, sort of consuming heroic figures, but it shifted over time, especially with the rise of the Hollywood film industry, and now with the rise of social media. Of course, we have reality television shows. The notion has shifted, but, you know, as you said, it has a history. It can be traced back to the Roman era.
And that's very interesting, because often we think of celebrity in sort of more modern time, in sort of a more modern era, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat that question again?
Yeah, we think of celebrity sort of in the modern era.
Celebrity, exactly.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Now there are celebrities who are using celebrity for the social good. I mean, I had the fortune of interviewing actress Muriel Hemingway, who mm-hmm. is well known for her work around mental health and living a healthy life. But there are many who have turned their celebrity for whatever reason, whether it may be that it's part of their brand, it's part of their business model, it could be part of their persona, or it is really a personal interest. But there is a growing number of celebrities and Hollywood stars who are using their celebrity to make a difference in the world. Angelina Jolie is certainly one of them. Mm-hmm. Emma Watson, more with her work with the UN. Is celebrity and the use of it sort of to change, to make social change? I mean, is that a new idea?
It's not necessarily a new idea, but I think with the rise of media and public relations, which is beyond, you know, having an agent in early Hollywood, it has given a new platform to activism. And I think more and more, you know, as we proceed, you know, with, you know, social media and everything, I think more and more celebrities find a lot of promise to raise awareness of the causes that they're fighting for. So it's not necessarily new, but I think their activism is gaining a lot of prominence with the rise of public relations, especially with the rise of social media.
Yes, and social media is sort of changing everything, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, social media has really changed the whole landscape of celebrity culture. I think, you know, fans can become celebrities with the use of social media, whether they have talent or not. I mean, you know, they do have an opportunity to become something like a celebrity. And celebrities can also, you know, have more control of their persona through social media. So basically, I mean, the visibility has really increased with social media. And because of this visibility, I think activism also has a better platform because there are more and more ways to share perspectives, to raise awareness, to generate funds. So yeah, it's very interesting to see how social media has an impact on celebrity culture, particularly celebrity activism.
Now, something that interests you in particular is health and wellness, and how mm-hmm. celebrities are using their fame mm-hmm. and to make a big difference in the world. I mean, I mentioned Mariel Hemingway, but also Woody Harrelson. There are a number of them, and we are going to talk a bit more about that after we take a break. But in the meantime, sure. We are just going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll cover more on celebrity activism, health and wellness, and doing more for the social good. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, more on Shannon Skinner Live.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Now you can take your favorite Voice America radio program with you anywhere. Sign up for our mobile app if you have an iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. The Voice America Interactive Radio Player, powered by Aircast, gives you the freedom to listen to any of our programs anywhere, live, and on demand. No registration is required. Listen to your favorite Voice America hosts and discover new ones. Download the Voice America mobile app for iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry, powered by Aircast. Visit the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
Hey, did you know Voice America has partnered with the Kidstar Network to expand their reach through Voice America Kids? Voice America Kids will feature talk radio for kids by kids, along with special event programming and live broadcasts. Each program is conveniently archived for on-demand listening at any time. Please check our archives for the latest events and happenings on voiceamericakids.com.
Voice America Network proudly presents The Catherine Zox Show for women, men, children, and families. Catherine magically combines her compassion, experience, and talent to bring listeners a show that's upbeat, informative, and yes, a little sassy. Tune in every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern to The Catherine Zox Show on the Voice America channel.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
You are tuned in to Shannon Skinner Live.
To reach our show today, please call 1-866-613-1612. Again, that's 1-866-613-1612. If you'd rather send an email, the address is info@shannonskinner.com. Now, back to Shannon Skinner Live.
Welcome back to Shannon Skinner Live. I'm your host, Shannon Skinner, here on Voice America Women's Channel. Now, I'm speaking to Dr. Samita Nandy. She's the director of the Center for Media and Celebrity Studies. She's also a cultural critic on Fame based in Toronto, where I'm based. And we're talking about sort of celebrity activism and the rise of celebrity and fame. Samita, I know that you have this interest in, particular interest in celebrity activism as it relates to health and wellness. I mean, it seems that today health and wellness is kind of the cool thing. It's the in thing, isn't it? Yoga and meditation, mm-hmm. It's become cool. But there are a number of celebrities who are very much behind the health and wellness movement. Perhaps you can just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure.
Your favorite examples.
I found many celebrities really inspiring when it came to health and wellness. And prior to that, I had a lot of exposure to developments in health and wellness through my colleagues, through my friends. And it was very interesting to see that we can make a change, we can have a choice. Celebrities such as Woody Harrelson, Tobey Maguire, Reese Witherspoon, Moby, Anne Hathaway, Alicia Silverstone, and Ellen DeGeneres were some of the many celebrities that really inspired me, and I feel that they are positive role models for health and wellness. They, through their diet, through their fitness, they address many social issues, for example, human rights, animal rights, environmental sustainability. And it was really interesting to see through their living examples of changes that there's no single issue. I mean, I think all the issues are interconnected, and through making healthy choices, we can make personal as well as social transformation.
Do you think that that's what's key? Is making sort of that personal healthy choice, and through making a healthy choice, we are just as a byproduct making healthy transformation and making healthy changes in the world?
I think so. I think it does have an impact. Some celebrities don't really follow a healthy lifestyle. And I think, ever since, Hollywood stardom was on the rise, we have many examples of that. Many celebrities are known for their heavy reliance on alcohol. Daniel Radcliffe is a very good example. Angelina Jolie confessed how she used every possible drug when there were scandals around Charlie Sheen. We know how he used drugs, alcohol, and cigarettes. So there are celebrities that don't really follow a healthy lifestyle, but then I can't claim that those celebrities are activists either. And whether they are activists or not, we cannot transfer our own responsibility of healthy choices to them. I think when it comes to making healthy choices, it really starts from our school, our universities, and more importantly, our own families. A lot of the changes start from home, but it's really inspiring to see that there are many celebrities who are subjected to the same social conditions that we're subjected to, but they are making certain changes. And it's really good to see positive examples.
Now, does it work, celebrity activism? I mean, in terms of mobilizing people to change, or do we sit back and watch what they're doing and clap and applaud in silence, are actually people being moved by them?
I think there is some impact, but it doesn't have as much of impact as it should. I think slavery activism can go a very long way. It doesn't have that much of an impact because of tabloid press, because of the representations that tabloid have. And there is a disconnect between their authentic self and the persona that they have. And I think that doesn't really help the cause. They do raise awareness. They help in raising funds, in lobbying. But because of the ways in which they're represented, the impact is not as strong as it should be. So there is impact, but it's not as strong. And I think there are ways to strengthen slavery activism, and more importantly, strengthen the issues that they're fighting for. I don't feel slavery activism, just like, you know, the causes that they're fighting for, is perfect, because the issues are very complex from the very start. But I do feel that there's more potential for growth.
And now we have a tendency to put our celebrities on pedestals. I mean, we look up to them, right? But do you think does that actually empower or disempower us? I mean, are we looking up to them and actually taking our own personal actions, saying we want to do these kinds of things, we want to be like them, so we're going to do what it takes? Or do you think inside we're saying, wow, you know, they're famous, they're glamorous, and you feel that perhaps makes us feel deep down not as valued?
I think it can go both ways. I do have friends and colleagues who are models. One in particular, went for the Miss Universe Canada pageant, and she was a contestant. And I always heard from her, you know, how she wanted to make a difference, and she was quite influenced, you know, by popular culture. I've heard many positive reviews, you know, like people do want to follow celebrities. They just feel that they're inspiring. I feel that, you know, when they're celebrated in a positive way, that can have a positive impact. But, you know, when we do put them on a pedestal, and we have a disconnect with them, it can have a negative impact in the sense that we don't take responsibility for our own action. And that's not helping the cause. So I think there are ways that we can bridge the gaps. I personally feel that, you know, public intellectuals, policymakers, politicians, and even audiences, you know, they can have a voice, you know, together. I think, you know, the more conversations we have, the more examples we give, it really helps the cause.
Well, this is great. Now you've got a book coming out. What's your book about?
Did you ask about that book?
Yes, you have a book coming out. Your Fame in Hollywood North. Yeah, quickly tell us what is it about?
Fame in Hollywood North talks about celebrity culture in a Canadian context and its contested relation with the Wild West in Hollywood. And it's very interesting to see through the Canadian context how celebrities are often commodified in a way that serves corporate interests, you know, and I sort of look at the celebrity in a national context, and also, you know, what are the shifts, of how is the notion of fame shifting from what we had in the past? There were a lot of hierarchies in the past, especially in the Hollywood studio system, but those hierarchies are also breaking. So in some ways, it's still very ideological, but at the same time, there's a lot of room for improvement. So I'm looking forward to sharing that book once it's released. It's exciting.
Now, we are going to, this has been a very insightful conversation, Samita, and enlightening. Thank you so much. If we could just leave our listeners with a good-to-know tip, your top success tip, what would that be?
I would say, you know, my family members, my supervisors, my colleagues were always very, very inspiring. And, you know, I would just draw on their inspiration and leave audiences with one thing that I really learned throughout my journey, and that is be a living example of change, keep an open heart, keep an open mind, and keep learning. One of the things that I learned throughout my research is that there's no end to learning, and the good news is that there's so much to learn, and we can all learn together. So it's a very exciting journey, and I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of changes.
Now, for reaching you, how can people reach you?
The best way to reach me is through my email. My email is samitanandy@gmail.com. And they could also visit my website, which is www.samitanandy.com.
Well, Samita, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing some of your expertise and knowledge and wisdom. And I wish you all the best with the Center for Media and Celebrity Studies, with your book. And we'll hope to have you back on the show at a later time.
I'm looking forward. Thank you, Shannon, for having me on your show.
Okay, have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
I've been speaking with Dr. Samita Nandy, the director of Center for Media and Celebrity Studies and cultural critic on fame based in Toronto. My next guest is Dr. Carolyn Harris. She's a royal historian and author of Magna Carta and Its Gifts to Canada. She received her PhD in European history at Queen's University and teaches at the University of Toronto School of Continuing Studies. She is a regular media commentator on history and royalty. Well, welcome, Carolyn, to the show.
Thank you.
Great having you here on the premiere episode.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, your background is quite interesting. You are, in essence, a historian. You're often called to comment and write about royal history in particular. What inspired you to really want to start to study history and really kind of how'd you get your start as a royal historian?
Well, I've always been very interested in history and royalty. I was on a family trip when I was in high school to England and France, and I just loved visiting Hampton Court Palace or Versailles. And these places where so many historical events had taken place and where interesting people had lived. So for my PhD, I looked at the role of the Queen during times of turmoil, the English Civil Wars and the French Revolution. And then in 2011, William and Kate were married, and there was interest in academics giving royal commentary about the history of royal events and royal weddings. So that's when I started doing royal commentary in addition to my research, and it's really just expanded from there, and now I do all sorts of interesting projects related to history and royalty.
Now, I mean, your work, you teach at the university, so you spend much of your day working, and I know that you have a love for media. How do you manage your time? I mean, you're a busy woman. You're being quoted all over the media, and you're teaching. I know you were speaking at TEDx yesterday.
Yes, every day is different and exciting. That generally, I have all sorts of projects on the go, and so I might be writing a Canadian Encyclopedia article about one of the fathers of Confederation one day, and then doing media work on the royal baby the next day, and then teaching at U of T the day after that. Or all these things might happen on the same day. So it's very interesting. I'm doing a lot of freelance work as a historian, as every day is different and there's such a wide variety of experiences.
And you've had the opportunity yourself to teach on cruise ships around the world. You travel, you speak. You've kind of become a celebrity in your own right.
Well, I wouldn't quite say that, but I've been very, very fortunate to have had these opportunities. I've lectured on three different
cruise lines. I've crossed the Atlantic and talked my way around Western Europe and the Baltic Sea. So it's been a very, very great way to travel and wonderful for audiences listening to the lecture as well, because when I'm talking about the building of St. Petersburg, often we're sailing right into St. Petersburg the next day. And so the audience is able to really visualize what's being talked about in the lectures.
Now, we as Canadians have a love for the British royal family. Our neighbors to the south have an appetite for them as well. The couple Kate and Will have become famous around the world as celebrities, maybe even of course, royalty first, but celebrities. But we're going to be talking more in this last segment about the royal family and advocacy and their philanthropy work and what that means to the social good. And in particular, I know that, well, Prince Charles has been very, very active and William now has also become very active advocates. But we are just going to take a break. And when we do, we'll come back to that topic. But anyway, we are going to take a break, and you've been listening to Shannon Skinner Live. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Dr. Carolyn Harris, who's a royal historian and author.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business talk.
For women, the pressure to achieve is stronger, the work hours longer, and the struggle for respect and authority more complex than ever. You want guidance on how to succeed, and you are not alone. You're invited to take your coffee break with Game Changers on Tuesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern for our special series, Game Changing Women. Powerful women leaders will help you make sense of it all, analyze how you can change the game, and share their playbooks. Game Changing Women, presented by SAP on the Business Channel.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business talk.
When you think of inspiring women, who comes to mind? Is it a visionary like Oprah Winfrey? Political or legal figures like Hillary Clinton or Sonia Sotomayor? Or how about entrepreneurial business leaders like Meg Whitman? No matter whom you might be thinking of, make sure to add one more to that list. Deanne DeMarco. She's the host of Today's Inspiring Women. Each week, Deanne turns you on to the next rising star in business and leadership and what their successes and challenges have been. Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Empowerment. Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to Shannon Skinner Live. To reach our show today, please call 1-866-613-1612. Again, that's 1-866-613-1612. If you'd rather send an email, the address is info@shannonskinner.com. Now, back to Shannon Skinner Live.
Welcome back to Shannon Skinner Live. I'm Shannon Skinner, your host, and I'm speaking with Dr. Carolyn Harris. She's a royal historian and author of The Magna Carta and Its Gifts to Canada. Now, we love the monarchy here in Canada, and they're in fact the British monarchy is kind of loved around the world, I would say. But they are also sort of becoming much more known for their advocacy work as well as their fame. What kind of insight can you shed on that, on their charitable work, their philanthropy work?
Well, it's very interesting that in medieval times, monarchs certainly were responsible for almsgiving, that everything from money being distributed to the poor on Maundy Thursday to even the distribution of leftovers from castle banquets to the poor. So certainly medieval royalty did engage in what we might consider charity, but philanthropy in the modern sense really dates from the reign of King George III during the 18th century. And what's also significant about his reign is the first time the court circular was published that listed the engagements of individual members of the royal family, what they were doing each day, which events they were involved in. So it encouraged the public to view the royal family within the context of all their different public engagements, including philanthropy. And this philanthropy expanded during the reign of George III's granddaughter, Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria's daughters became involved in various causes, from nursing to women's education. And now we see it's a very key aspect of royal life to be involved in philanthropy and charitable advocacy. And members of the royal family have raised the profile of numerous charitable causes and organizations around the world.
I mean, why are we so fascinated with William and Kate? I mean, that is the world is really watching them, and we'll be watching the work that they do for years to come.
Well, there's a lot of interest in William and Kate because, in contrast to previous royal couples, the public feels that they can relate to them in a very personal way. They became a couple while they were in university. They dated and lived together for years before becoming engaged, and then they took their time starting a family after they were married. Kate's fashions are simpler than some of her predecessors and are more accessible to the public. So a lot of people look at William and Kate and they feel they're seeing a modern young couple who they can relate to and who have similar values to their own. So there's a great deal of fascination with their activities. We're also seeing royal events are being publicized on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and scenes from royal tours on YouTube. And so there are a lot of different opportunities for the public to engage in the work that members of the royal family do.
Now, William and Kate in particular are more or less seen as celebrity in the idea that we think of celebrity, whereas perhaps other royal family members, I mean, are they viewed as celebrities as well?
Well, I think it depends on who is viewing them. It's in the UK and the various Commonwealth realms, including Canada, the Queen is head of state, and Prince Charles, Prince William, and now Prince George are future heads of state. So there's always a political dimension to how royalty is being viewed as we're looking at future monarchs of these various Commonwealth realms. Whereas in the United States and other countries that are not constitutional monarchies and where they're not seeing Charles, William, and George as future heads of state, there's more focus on what we might think of as celebrity coverage and viewing them as famous people and viewing them as part of a family saga. That unlike many celebrities who come to fame when they were older, William and Harry, you know, as the children of Charles and Diana, were born into public life. And so the public around the world feels as though they watched them grow up. And that's part of the reason why there was so much interest in William's marriage to Kate Middleton, as there were many people who remembered him mourning his mother, Princess Diana, and were pleased to see that he had found happiness in his adult life.
Do you think that the royals have a greater obligation to be advocates? Do you think that they need to be viewed as living healthier lifestyles or treating, really standing up for human rights or animal rights more than anyone else?
Well, the kinds of causes that royalty tends to take on are those that will require generations to address. This is one of the reasons why environmentalism, for instance, has been a favored cause of members of the modern royal family, Prince Philip, what was involved with the World Wildlife Fund. Prince Charles is an advocate of organic farming and sustainable development, and now we see Prince William involved in conservation. And even Prince George's, you know, one of his earliest public appearances is at the Sydney Zoo in Australia, at the Bilby enclosure, which right then raises public awareness of the conditions faced by Australian wildlife. And so these are the kinds of causes of conservation, protection of endangered species, that need more than a standard four-year election cycle to be addressed. And so royalty who see themselves in a role where their ancestors were there for generations and they hope their descendants will be there for generations to come tend to address these long-term causes where there are no easy fixes.
And, of course, Kate Middleton has taken on health and sort of children's medical health issues, a lot around children.
Yes, and health-related issues have also been championed by various members of the royal family. Princess Diana helped remove some of the stigma from HIV and AIDS sufferers. And even if we go back to Queen Victoria's reign, that Queen Victoria and her daughters were supporters of the work of Florence Nightingale, who opened up nursing as a respectable profession for middle-class women and revolutionizing the nursing profession. So we've seen royalty engaging with health and wellness for centuries.
What could we learn from them? I mean, is there any wisdom for us?
Well, they raises the profile of particular causes, as I mentioned before, Princess Diana and her advocacy on behalf of those suffering from AIDS and HIV helped clear up some of the misconceptions surrounding these conditions. So members of the royal family are able to use their public profile and their very vast network of connections that the Queen has been Queen since 1952 and has known various world leaders personally since that time. And so members of the royal family are not only able to attend charitable events or fundraisers, but are also able to call in a very vast network of connections in order to raise awareness of the causes they champion.
Are there sort of any sort of historical anecdotes about royals or some that stands out in your mind, and some interesting story about any historical figure in their work with charity?
Well, I think an anecdote that really demonstrates the attitude of modern members of Europe's royal families comes from the childhood of Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands, who was queen in exile during the Second World War, was such an inspirational figure during the Dutch resistance. But she came to the throne when she was only 10 years old and noticed that when she went out in her carriage, everyone was cheering. And she asked her mother, "Do all these people belong to me?" And her mother said, "No, you belong to them." So I think there's that spirit of public service for the various members of Europe's royal houses in how they engage with the public and the mission to give back to the public as much as possible.
Now, you authored a book. Your book is called The Magna Carta, and it's Gifts to Canada. Tell us a little bit about your book. Why did you write it?
The book complements the Magna Carta Canada 2015 exhibition, which is starting in Ottawa at the Museum of History in June, then going to the Winnipeg Human Rights Museum in the summer, and then Fort York in Toronto in October and November, and then the tour ends in Edmonton. So I was asked to write the book to complement the Magna Carta Canada exhibition. I had been writing articles for the Magna Carta Canada website for about a year before I began work on the book. So I'd really immersed myself in Magna Carta, the document, this foundation of common law and human rights in many parts of the world, and the document itself, but also in the life and times of the various people who engaged with the document, whether it was King John, who was compelled to accept terms from his barons in 1215, or the various authors of the Declaration of Independence during the American Revolution, or the Declaration of the Rights of Man and the Citizen during the French Revolution, who all were inspired by Magna Carta in various ways. So I had the pleasure of putting together all these interesting connections regarding this 800-year-old document in this book to complement the exhibition.
Now, for anyone who's listening that is not from Canada, can you just explain to us briefly what the Magna Carta is?
Oh, yes. The Magna Carta was a charter imposed on King John by his barons in 1215, and it's the first example of an English monarch accepting limits on his power imposed by his subjects. So while many of the clauses are very distinctly of the 13th century, there are also timeless clauses that have stood the test of time, that justice shall not be denied or delayed, the rights to a form of due process, trial by peers. So there's lasting legal rights there. There's early references to women's rights, that noble widows were to be exempt from forced remarriage. And then instead of simply being a treaty between a king and his discontented nobles and clergymen in 1215, the document inspired future generations, inspired the emergence of Parliament in 1265, you know, 50 years after Magna Carta, and the parliamentary system of government. And then after a period of obscurity in the 16th century in Tudor times, and it was thought best that there was a strong monarch to deal with outside threats, the document had this revival in the 17th century and went on to inspire the American Revolution, the French Declaration of the Rights of Man, Canada's Confederation, and the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So 800 years later, the Magna Carta is still making its presence known.
Where can people buy your book, Carolyn?
Well, they can buy my book at wherever books are sold. The book was released in Canada at the beginning of May and is now available in the United States and United Kingdom as well.
So what is next for you?
What is next for me? I'm going to be doing a great deal of traveling around Canada and lecturing as the Magna Carta crosses Canada. So I'm going to Ottawa in June for the opening of the Magna Carta Canada exhibition, and I'm off to Winnipeg in August to give lectures, and then in the fall I'm going to be lecturing at Fort York. So lots of opportunities to educate Canadians about Magna Carta and to travel around Canada.
More books coming from you too, I would suspect.
Possibly. I have a number of ideas for future books. Certainly the second book is going to be based on my PhD dissertation, which looked at Queen Henrietta Maria, Charles I's wife, during the English Civil Wars, and Marie Antoinette during the French Revolution. So the second book will be called Queenship and Revolution in Early Modern Europe, and look at how the Queen was perceived during these times of conflict.
Now, Carolyn, we are just out of time, and it is really time for my good-to-know tip. So you have a success tip. What would be your top success tip?
My top tip for success would be to talk to as many people as possible in the field you would like to be in. I've had the pleasure of speaking to many other authors, other historians. So I recommend, you know, speaking to as many people as possible and learning from those who've gone down your path before and expanding your knowledge and connections that way.
Well, thank you, Carolyn Harris. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And I wish you all the best.
Oh, thank you.
I've been speaking with Carolyn Harris. She's a royal historian and author of Magna Carta and Its Gifts to Canada. Well, that's all the time we have today. For more information about Shannon Skinner Live and my guests, I invite you to visit my website at shannonskinner.com as well for a dose of inspiration and life guidance resources for women. Check out my website, extraordinarywomentv.com. And to keep the conversation going, join me on Twitter at Shannon_Skinner and on Facebook, connect with me at Shannon Skinner. Of course, I'm on Instagram at Shannon Skinner too. Well, thanks for joining me. I'm Shannon Skinner. I look forward to connecting with you next week.
That's all we have time for this week on Shannon Skinner Live. Be sure to join us again next Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Women's Channel. We can't wait to talk again soon.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Women's Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericawomen.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.